For National Poetry Month in April, KWBU is highlighting four local poets to share what influences their work, as well as how they entered into the medium. Our third poet is Isis Lee. Isis is a local musician, singer-songwriter, and poet in the Waco area. She is the organizer and host of the Waco Poet Society and has been published in several magazines, including Stone Circle, Nota Bene, and Bohemia. She has also performed in poetry slams and word competitions around Central Texas. Welcome, Isis.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm so thrilled to be here.
I'm glad to have you. How did you get started in your poetry and how did you become interested in poetry?
To be honest, as a young girl, I used to read a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. Loved all his work. And so as a young girl, I just kept trying to expand my horizons through writing, and finding it therapeutic was kind of really important, something I felt safe. It was my safe space. And I remember my first crush kind of led me to fill an entire notebook with just writings. And I just felt compelled to say all these things, but I couldn't say them to him. So a lot of my writings always come from an emotional, secretive place. And I love that level of intimacy. And I love exploring it. And it allows me to learn so much about myself. I'm comfortable in that space.
Did you start writing poetry first, or did you start writing, like, music?
It started with poetry. It's always been words. I'm kind of a literary nerd, and I always loved reading. I remember as a young girl, I would go into the library, and I didn't have too many friends, so I would spend my time picking out books, and I bonded with so many. Paul Zindel's one of my favorite authors. As a young girl, the things that he would focus on kind of spoke to me. I had so many ways to relate to him. And then there's just so many other great poets that I ended up discovering. Maya Angelou. I remember in the fourth grade reading the Caged Bird poem that she has, When the Caged Bird Sings. And I had not experienced any kind of oppression as a multiracial female. But what I read in that kind of made me realize that there's this tragic side to life, and there's so much beauty in that tragic nature. So I definitely got very comfortable exposing my wounds through my writing. Words are powerful, and I've always appreciated the printed word. And for myself, I have many inspirations. One of them, Jim Morrison from The Doors. As a musician, I've always loved music. I hold it very high on my objectives every day. But one of the most important things that I can relate to with him is he didn't think that he was successful until he was an acclaimed poet, till he had that book in front of him and all his work was in that. That was something to be proud of. And Patti Smith, oh my gosh, a phenomenal female writer and an awesome rock and roll icon. I just always grew up feeling this parallel with her. I read her autobiography and I was shocked to read things that I'm like, she's telling my story, like being a poet and feeling awkward and being the outsider and finding comfort in those moments alone with my pen. Words on paper is what I live by. And when I moved on to applying into being a musician, and I started doing songwriting and kind of putting some of those phrases that kept popping up in my head into musical context and creating verses and choruses. And I've been working on music my whole life and I didn't know it, but it all started with words. Writing is the most important thing to me.
So since you actually started writing at a young age, how have you seen either the topics that you explore or your writing style develop over the years?
Well, when I was young, all the like dark, complex subject matter in, like, say, Edgar Allan Poe stuff, most people are like, that's kind of spooky, it's dark. I feel like nowadays people are more honest with some of those things that come from places of depression and anxiety. And I think that as we've evolved socially, what I've noticed, and I've studied psychology too, is we don't sweep things under the rug anymore. We're in a position now where we are comfortable talking about issues that stem from trauma, psychological effects that happen in our youth, even things of happiness. Sometimes we don't realize, like, where these things come from. I love writing and having a sense of nostalgia from my youth. And it's sentimental and it's heart-wrenching sometimes, but it's really beautiful. And I always find that my best work comes from places of pain and agony. And I try not to find it as a dark thing to not share. That's some of the most beautiful songs and some of the most beautiful phrases. And Shakespeare, like, when I think about some of the greatest writing, it comes from this wounded place this place of intimate exposure and reflection. And for me, that's why I love the writing process. It's my sense of religion where I find home.
So you kind of touched on a question that I did want to ask you, which is, do you have like a place that you like to write or a mood that you like to be in where you feel like you can churn out things easily?
I've challenged myself to that. Sometimes I like when people just randomly give me a topic and I challenge myself in 2 minutes to write a poem. Words just flow out of me and I have that gift. So for me, I can churn out anything on any topic at any given moment. But when I am just kind of in my process, I like being alone because it gives me a chance to. And this probably isn't the best advice. Don't go out there and drink and get moody like I do. But I find my best writing comes when I sit there with a bottle of inspiration and I pick up my pen and have solitude. And it's kind of like my own therapy. It's kind of like having the intimacy in writing in my journal. But I do it with this intention of, all right, pull down all the walls and let's be honest. And so I think sometimes I need a little liquid courage for that.
I want to go into when you started doing spoken word. What was the first time like? Where were you? I want to know it all.
Okay. So I was in the fifth grade. We had a talent competition and everybody was singing or dancing. And I was the only nerd that went up on stage and performed a monologue. And it was based off this Russian writer. I can't remember his name, but it's called My Papa's Waltz. Or When Papa Waltz, I can't remember. It's a short story. But I ended up writing a monologue from the mother's perspective. There's like one line when the boy mentions the mother. And so my focus was like, I want to know more about the mom. And I did this monologue and I performed it live and I got really into it. I dressed up and I became the character. And the setting was like probably like in Russia, like probably in the early 20s, so right after World War One, and the setting is kind of tragic. The story between him and his father, he talks about his father waltzing, but his father comes in drunk, and he comes home and he beats his wife, and this young boy can hear his father, and the whole thing is really dark, but my focus as a woman has always been the woman's role. Who is, you know, the person behind the man? And it's the same thing. I've always kind of appreciated the people in the foreground, like the people behind the main character. Like, those are the people that kind of inspire. It's kind of like Lord of the Rings when I think about Samwise. He's kind of my favorite because without him pushing Frodo, it wouldn't even be happening. Their journey wouldn't be happening. So I always appreciate the people that inspire the main character. And so I felt this need to get on stage and be this woman of oppression and be this woman who's overlooked and expose her love for this child and her sympathy for the fact that she can't step away from her reality of poverty, her reality of maybe there's not, avenues for education and civil rights for people, especially back then. I mean, nowadays there's an organization to help someone with an 800 number and an organization somewhere out online that can always help you. But back in the day, a lot of women had to suffer alone. And I've always felt compelled in exposing the history of the role of women. And I am a feminist. I grew up with parents that were both feminist. And we talked about things that maybe most people are uncomfortable talking about, but I've always felt compelled to expose the inner workings of the mind and the spirit and everything that plays into that and why we do what we do. And it's something I'm very comfortable with. And when I performed that monologue, I got this reaction from the crowd that I think at that age I didn't understand, but now that I look back on it, I've always been a performer. It started so many years ago, and I've just been waiting for a stage. And one of my favorite quotes that I got from a fortune cookie when I was a little girl, and I still have it. I saved it, and it means everything to me. It says, "The time for action is now. The audience is waiting." And since I've had that, it's been kind of like why I do what I do.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
I actually want to go into your first poem.
Oh, my gosh.
Just so I can kind of get a sense, and then we can go on and talk a little bit more.
I got really, really proud with this piece. This one was actually published in the Stone Circle and won, I want to say, like second or third place. But when I wrote this, this one is about my father. My father was a huge inspiration, a huge role model to me. And he passed away when I came to Waco. He passed away from cancer, stomach cancer. It was really hard. And when I wrote this poem, it was like he was writing through me. And I definitely was so proud when I opened up the magazine and saw that this is the piece that was published, because I didn't know. I had submitted like four or five different ones. And when this one got published and I saw it, I was just crying tears of sheer joy. So this one, I hope I don't cry. This one's called Echo in Time. I have not skipped in fields of grass or ran my hands along the side of beauty. For in my youth, I found rebellion in my glass, and I sipped and I swam in its deliverance. Time served to seduce ideas of youth, to alarm passion, and to bleed for all lust. I relied on blurred visions to decide my fate, and hurried along to delay my oblivion. Dreams were left enchanted by the day, and as I woke to not a single whisper, it was the cold that came to greet the day anew.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thank you. That's Echo in Time, and that's something I dedicate to my father.
What are some other instances throughout your life that you have felt your poetry helped you out of that situation or helped you? It doesn't necessarily have to be like a negative situation or like a sad situation, maybe happy situation.
Oh, I can honestly say that when you write a poem and you're infatuated with someone and you're just so giddy and alive and you can't help but chuckle to yourself and you feel really silly. I'm the kind of girl that will write sonnets all day and night about someone I love. And it feels so good to be that honest, because like when I see them face to face, I get jumbled up on my words. I'm really good with words on paper. And if I have time to write something, it's very well organized and everything is said very lovely. But in person, I'm a bumbling idiot. I have anxiety. I'm awkward. I'm human. And all of those things that most people experience are things that even I, as a performer and as a writer, I still succumb to those. Like I get jittery and awkward. And so if I can't say it to someone in, you know, face to face, when I can sit there and be honest and write something that comes from sheer joy and sheer inspiration and a real place of love, when I write that and I can see that there's not just this nature in me that can reveal a darkness, there's a nature in me that shows hope and shows light. And that's a great reminder, because as a writer, sometimes you can get stuck in your, you know, little sad, you know, I feel like the tortured artist who constantly, like, I delve into my depression, I delve into my anxiety, and I'm comfortable doing that because it is therapeutic. But sometimes diving headfirst into love and finding that addiction and that joy is really refreshing, because it's not just the heavy dark side that can swallow you whole. Sometimes the beautiful light and the wonderful splendor of the day can give you everything you ever needed. And so it's a balance. Like I'm one of those persons that doesn't like to get stuck on one side or the other. It's a balance of both.
I actually want to talk about how you came to Waco.
Okay.
And then also talk about the Waco Poet Society.
Can you tell me
both of those stories?
Okay. Well, my journey to Waco was quite sad. My father had terminal cancer, and my parents had just moved to Waco from Florence, Italy. Both of them had been living abroad for up to 3 years, and they had discovered my father's cancer was getting worse. They did not have universal health coverage. So they ended up depleting all their funds to the point where they had to just come back to the United States. I have a sister who works for MCC, Annette Bigham. She's phenomenal. One of the best women who I can honestly say I've seen go far and beyond for her students. She is the reason why I went back to school after losing Dad. And she kind of kicked my butt into, like, that academic direction, like, where I knew, like, going back to school was something Dad would be proud of, but it was also going to make me feel more complete, because I dropped out of college early in life, and I wanted to go out there and live, and Jack Kerouac was inspiring me, and I just wanted to be on the road and earn every day. And that was a great way to live, but when I came to Waco, the reality of losing my father and seeing how that devastated our family. And we were outsiders. We didn't know anybody in Waco. We couldn't go to our friends. We had no friends. It was a very hard time. And I remember 2009 and 2010 being some of the darkest times in my life. And I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of just suffering, where I allowed that suffering to be part of my grieving process. And during that process, I was writing. I was writing a lot. I started picking up the guitar. I started getting uncomfortable with just writing, and I tried to find other ways to find an outlet as an artist. So performance theater, getting out in public, just kind of creating a persona. Like, I just want to, I'm so tired of being depressed, need to turn this into something else. So when I first came to Waco, it was really a huge milestone. It was me being forced into accepting where I am in life, the things that I can't continually run away from. I started feeling compelled and trying to own every day, earn every day, and make every day count, because I don't know when it's going to end. And going back to school, I took some music classes, started writing. And when I started getting out of my depression after losing Dad, I ended up going downtown and just finding a stoop to stand on. And I was just down, like, right by the suspension bridge. And I was reciting poetry to people walking. And it was like midnight. And there was a small gathering that started coming every night at the same time to see if I was going to be out there. And I met some people who eventually organized the Bohemia magazine. Amanda Hickson was one of the first persons I met here in Waco who introduced me to what I didn't even know there was a scene for poetry. So we all used to, like, meet at her house and read our poetry from our journals. And then she was like, I'm going to make a magazine. Let's do it. And when I was at school, one of my professors who I totally just admire, James McCowan, he's one of the most inspiring, and he challenges you as a writer.
He's a host here.
I know he is.
Yeah.
And I have to do a shout out to him, because he was one of the persons. He called me to his office after he assigned this thing for the semester. You have one thing you can do. You can put together a chapter book, or, you know, do something big, write a section of a story, like a chapter. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to throw all my poetry out there. And I had been working on it for a long time, and I came up with this phrase, a muse amused, I mused. And it's the title for one of my pieces, and I ended up putting all of my poetry that comes from love. And I divided it into sections. The first one, amuse, it's like amusement. You're so happy, you're inspiring each other. And then you become that person's muse. So I was a muse in that situation of finding love. And it's the evolution of my self-discovery as a woman, sexually, romantically, physically. And love will take you to some dark places. My first relationships were really hard and traumatic. And so by chapter 3, it's I'm used. And so all of the dark stuff kind of came out there, and it was so therapeutic. And that's what I turned into my professor. And he calls me into his office, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's going to tell me, like, why did you turn this crap in? This is girly and annoying, and you're just spouting out, you know, cliche things. And he tells me the absolute opposite. He's like, this is really great. Do something with this. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to writing. I hadn't been writing for a while. I had just been kind of dabbling with it, and so I started taking a really professional and serious approach at becoming a voice in the art scene. And so I started working with Bohemia Magazine. I go to poetry slams, and then being at MCC and studying music, being able to transfer some of those poetic lines into words and phrases for some of my songs, it just made sense. I had books and books of lyrics, and people are like, I have so much trouble writing words. I don't know how to, like, put things together. And I'm like, I could do that all day and night. In fact, sometimes I go to sleep, and I've been told that I recite poetry in my sleep. I sing in my sleep. I laugh in my sleep. I have full-on conversations. So, like, words are just itching to come out. And so I love my journey here in Waco and what it's taken me to. I definitely ended up focusing on music towards, like, 3 years being here as a Wacoan, just decided I'm going to start an all-girl band. And I met these fabulous ladies who inspired me, and we were all rocker chicks who were just focused on doing something that was important to us. And We wanted to start an all-girl project and create a beautiful atmosphere for music and shared growth and emotion and convey something that was honest and real. And that journey pushed me into becoming a musician. And I haven't stopped. The poetry is coming out every day. I even write commercials sometimes. I have a five-minute short play that's about two aristocrats. It's a man and a woman. And the man's got this great idea to tell his wife the perfect recipe for the perfect woman. And every time he has something to say, like, here's a reason why this is how you make a perfect woman, she's cutting down his manhood. And there's a lot of really witty, I guess adult humor in there, but it's so smart. And I performed it for two people and they were like, oh my gosh, this is fabulous. I haven't done it publicly though. It's something that's in the works.
So because you started out in poetry, but then later did music, do you still find that those two parts of you are separate, or have they kind of like intermingled with each other?
Ooh, okay. So now you're talking about some headspace stuff. I'm going to tell you something. I feel like I've always been comfortable psychologically looking at myself, you know, from the id to the ego to the alter ego. I'm comfortable exploring the notion that for different times and different places, there's a different version of me you're going to get. And I think I have a healthy way of handling what I like to say is a multitude of scenarios where I have this wild imagination. I was a kid who used to play with my imaginary friends, and I got really comfortable doing that. So I've always known, like, I'm just making these characters up. It's just an outlet. I don't have multiple personalities, but I've allowed myself to find freedom in exploring, you know, a way for myself to explore things that might seem uncomfortable as, hi, I'm Isisley, but then I can put on this facade and be this character, and I am so bold, and I'm so confident, and nothing can stop me. And it's kind of, my alter egos are some of my favorite role models, I gotta say. There's Ren Voss, who's half man, half woman. And Ren Voss has performed publicly here in Waco at the Word Fest. And I just remember everyone was going up on stage and they were reading their poetry or performing their monologues. The moment I came in, I was two different people walking in the same body. It was a divide from head to toe. One side was male, one side was female. I had a purse on one side, a cane on the other, a heel and a loafer. It was like, and I'm up on stage reciting this poetry with both of these people trying to argue their way into the mic and take charge. And then my last song, or my last piece, was actually me singing and playing, where I was throwing my voice from one character to the other. So I'm singing a duet, this one person singing a duet with these two multi-characters. And I just remember looking in the audience and seeing all these jaws dropped. And I'm like, I don't know if they're going to want me back. But since then, I've just had so many people come up to me like, I remember the first time I saw you. You did that crazy thing. You were like half man, half woman. And so I've always been comfortable pushing like the level of what people are comfortable in exposing in the local art scene. Waco is evolving, and in the beginning I was afraid to be myself. Now more than ever, I am more myself, and people want to see that. They want to see you honest. They want to see the raw, gritty, behind the scenes. Don't just give me the cliche like, woe is me, I'm gonna, you know, talk about my depression. There's so much more to talk about. And I feel like poetry is an art form that I'm comfortable in, but I consider myself like an all-around performer. I've done everything from theater work to, you know, musical performance. I've also facilitated in helping just all the academic things in school, like anything that we had to do to get an event hosted. Like, I wanted to help facilitate that. I'm really good at organizing things. So I'm proud to be a nerd, and I've always kind of carried that flag very boldly.
Well, I'd love to hear your second poem.
All right, this next one, it's going to be a little lengthier, and I'm really excited to share this. I got to kind of put on a jazz swagger for this.
Oh, you're okay.
See, she's the kind of girl you take out in public and quickly realize you'd rather not be seen by the kids at Headspace. Cool kids in fad thrash, hipster crew shirts, and killer faux leather jackets. Denim cut jackets, too proud to realize or recognize the elevator music by the Rat Pack stars like the Dean. I spot the swell of thrift shop sniffs and cold drawn-out swagger in her presence, and I recoil as if instantly I'd be recognized. So the weasel in Pimp Skid Row's skirt rips into my girl and flashes fast cash down the pinstripe tip smack back and unleashes like a hound. And the smell of whiskey fingers bring me back down to cool playing blues two rooms over. No need to rustle up feathers. So a calm replaces the look of casual remorse with soft smoke muddled murmurs that sound smooth to my new honey. So she dives down into her breast pocket and lifts out a sweet nicotine kiss that's supposed to replace all mention of what the words no mean to a guy like me. And I rush past the exits and sneak her kitten clutch bag into the back of my cream leather cruiser with the other pieces of the last few days bringing on the stale smoke and wasteland liquor passes as we careen down Highway 69, wrestling with the ideas of free men. As the sweat thickens on the beads of my throat, and I know in the morning she will be gone, replaced with the sweet illusion of freedom.
That's so cool.
I totally imagine, like, Quentin Tarantino, like, directing the visual of that, all of that, so.
It's very, like, the way you performed it was even very, like, fast-paced and, like it had a bounce to it.
I definitely need someone to play the stand-up bass when I play it, just like, ba-doom, doom, 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 ba-doom, doom, and then I just do that poem.
So in the poem, you're taking a male perspective.
Oh, yeah. I'm like this dude who just wants to get laid at a bar, and I see some sweet honey who's really drunk, and I just go ahead and say, I don't know who she is, and I don't care who's watching. I'm taking that. And it's about indulgence. It's about being bold and exploring the things in life that are bad for us, you know, and sometimes when you're pushing yourself into that exploratory realm, you can't hold back sometimes. And so this song is about deviance from that male perspective. And I do kind of I do want to say that I did mention, you know, that she sends out that sweet nicotine that's supposed to replace all mentions of what the words no mean to a guy like me. I think that it's important to show that there's this lack of clarity in what the rules are in dating. Sometimes, you know, men don't hear the word no when it's very obvious that they should not. So this was also a response to, and I don't want to say anything too political, but a lot of things that have come up regarding rape, regarding female rights, regarding the Me Too, you know, and all of that. I feel compelled to show another version of what's happening there. Sometimes the guy is just this lonely guy who has nothing better to offer the world. And he, you know, he's a scumbag, but he's got this whole plan to try and find a way to put himself into a form of feeling important, even if it's just for that one night, that one thrill, that one high. And I feel sorry for that guy. And that's what this poem reflects. He's going to wake up to the same stale smoke, the same taste of whiskey, all alone, and it's a tragic way of being. And I did want to make that stance with this poem. And I've done that a lot in my writing, where I write myself as a man, or I write just a different perspective that's totally not me.
Have you ever felt as though there are certain topics that might have been prohibited when you first started that you've kind of broken through and like, no, we're going to talk about this?
Oh, yeah. I feel like whenever someone hears anything that gets on the erotic nature or erotic tone, it's just like taboo, can't go there. Oops, that's like adult conversation. And for me, I'm very honest from a psychological standpoint in why some of my work gets to be sexual or kind of suggestive on that end. I am a woman who has lived through oppression. I'm a woman who's gone through abuse, sexual abuse, violence. And I feel like I notice that whenever you take that role of victim in your life, people want to put their arms around you, give you a hug and say, oh, I'm so sorry about that, but now is not the time and place. You know, sometimes we can't talk about those things. I would love to create a dialogue where we can address some of those traumas and how they don't always fall into the same categories of understanding. We don't all get to be called a victim and get to get the same treatment equally. Sometimes we don't get to even ask for help. And it's not just the victim who goes through that. The family that's there to try and help catch that person, they suffer too. Like, I've always been compelled to expose the nature of my past and my experiences. And I've written some dark things that I feel like maybe it'll be really hard for my family to read. But the truth is the truth. And I'm one of those persons that there's just so much more to gain in putting everything on the table. And some things take some time to focus through. And some things can be easily overlooked, but you should never ignore what's on the table. You know, that's how I feel. And I feel like, so some of the sexual stuff that taps into the dark side, which comes from traumas and sexual abuse, I would like to be the voice for so many people who don't get a chance to even get the help and the therapy they need. They're stuck in this box and they're going crazy. And so sometimes I feel like I can relate to that. And if it wasn't for my writing, I would never be confident enough to like find treatment and deal with some of those things in a healthy way, you know, and get the medical assistance that I've needed. I did grow up with sexual abuse in my life. That did lead to so many bad things. I turned into that runaway that did drugs and broke all the rules. And a lot of parents would tell their children not to hang out with me. And I had a bad rap for a long time, and I felt really sad and really alone because I was just trying to escape my prison. And I ran into a lot of bad things, and I was really alone. And I think that now that I look back on it, I have no shame in some of those things. I'm sad for that girl that had to experience it. But now, the kind of woman that I am, I will never not recognize that there is a young girl or a young boy. Men in particular are overlooked with sexual abuse, and that's really sad. And I think that I just feel like that dialogue needs to be opened up. I think we need to be honest about, you know, exposing some of those realities that those kids have to grow up with, and that we would be saving a lot of people if we just let them talk, give them some space. I was lucky that I found it in with a pen and paper. Words on paper saved my life.
Would you mind reading your third poem?
Yes. I have, this one is actually something I recently wrote, and I think it's really important to share because as a writer, sometimes like I feel bad. I have all these journals that are empty, and I'm like, I could have filled them up by now. But you get stuck in living through your process, and you don't sometimes have the time to reflect on it. So this one's called A Trial of Explanation. I stopped writing, and I can't remember why exactly that is. I always had such freedom here in this forum, finding myself when in all other forms I felt lost, but not ever in this could I fall prey to that kind of uncomfortable exposure. Being naked on the page was freedom. Even in my raw and unhidden eloquence, I was able to explore every bit of myself without any shame. So lately, I've begun to wonder, why now? How come suddenly I've developed this inability to explore that wilderness, that radical jungle where words and wisdom serve as time machines? Ever wondersome, in this, our own self-exploration and explanation. I wish I could explain why I ever departed from this one true form of being and have it actually make any sense. But it feels rather like sacrilege to try to rationalize it at all. See, nothing is worse than going against the truth. The level of dishonesty that one must obtain to deny the most elemental form of self-awareness is justly found in that experience of being a writer. My most humble and virtuous moments come from when my body and mind connect as one through the use of words. Words on paper is an absolute way of life that I have always perceived as precious, as much as necessary.
That's really lovely.
Thank you.
So in that poem, I do want to dissect that.
Okay.
It's almost like I got a sense of forgiveness, like you're forgiving yourself for giving yourself a moment to breathe.
Yeah.
What are some of those themes that you are exploring now that you've gone through difficult times that you're learning? Maybe it's like a self-care aspect, but what are some themes that you are seeing now in your poetry?
I'm seeing myself finding no shame. I'm seeing myself finding just adoration and pride, like worthiness in who I am. When before, I felt like garbage. I felt like I was nothing. And a lot of that came from the abuse I went through. And not having anybody help me through that, I'm going to admit this, and this is really hard, but as a young girl, I went to my parents and told them I was being abused sexually, and nobody believed me. And having that reality hit me in the face that you can't rely on the people who are supposed to be there for you, it makes you feel so alone. And as it is, like, we all suffer. We all have to face the inevitable. And our journeys, no matter how different they are, actually have so many things that are very common. I'm not saying everybody goes through sexual abuse, but I feel that when I expose my story, it's very relatable. So many of us feel used. So many of us feel abandoned, whether it's from having an absent parent or not having just a reliable sense of security as a child. I remember the hardest thing, and the hardest thing to realize is that you can't trust everyone. And when I found out even that that can pertain to family and that can pertain to the people who you absolutely look up to as your role models, that right there was really difficult. And I remember believing people when they said, "You're lying. That's not true." So my worthiness went way down, and I spent my early teen, my preteen years, and my early years of being a woman and being a young girl, falling in love, having my first boyfriend, my first kiss, like all of those first times, they were shaped with this need to take anything I could get because I knew that I was nothing. And I allowed so many people to step in and hurt me, and I became weakened by that devastation, and it was very difficult, and it took a lot of loss and a lot of just isolation, really. I had to face myself, and I had to change my perspective on who I am and who I know that I've always been meant to be, and I had to forgive myself for ever having expected it to be anything but what it is now. Like, Oprah said something that's really phenomenal to me, and I wrote it down when she said it because that's actually when I kind of kicked myself in the butt and said, enough. Yes, it happened, but you got to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself and move on. And your process is okay. However it happens, whatever it took, time to just focus on how good you are, how strong you are, how beautiful you are. And the whole time I needed to hear that as a young girl, and I never did. So it was really hard for me. But what Oprah said was really important. She said, forgiveness is allowing yourself to forget that the past could have been. And I didn't know what that meant at first, and I had to write it down. And I read it, and I read it, and I saw it every day. And I realized I was so mad that I didn't turn out into that vision of what I thought was supposed to be perfect. I had to let that go and forgive that self and kind of let that child die and not carry that wounded victim with me everywhere. It was just about acceptance. And once I accepted everything, I saw my worth. I felt how important my journey has been and how, as honest as I'm willing to be, like that power that I have in having this ability to exist without denying something, exist without just, I don't like shame and I don't like lies. And for me, like, that is the best way to live. And I've spent so much of my life being ashamed and feeling like I should just keep my head down and shut up. And there's no more of that. I'm a strong woman, and I turned into the role model I needed back then. I'm going to continue to help people, and I'm going to continue to help myself and reach that epitome of what for me is success. And my only goal growing up was to experience life completely and fully without ever holding back and not letting anything stop me. Whatever that means, it's ambiguous, but you know what? It's a journey that won't end until I'm ready to end it, you know, and I feel like every day is, there's a chance for something to happen. There's a chance to inspire someone. Things will grow. You can plant seeds in people simply by sharing your experiences, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah. I mean, you can't compete with the truth, you know. So what are some of your current projects that you're working on now?
Actually, right now I'm doing a summer camp over the summer. It's going to be at Cultivate 712, and I'm working with children doing a vocal tech project. It's the K-Tech Vocal Tech Project. And I'm trying to implement some of the techniques I've learned being a musician and being a vocalist and trying to allow these kids to explore finding their own voice. Vocal improvisation is pretty wonderful. It's pretty radical. There's a lot of technical stuff that goes into it, things that you need to learn as far as structure and organization to create music that can be shareable and that you can perform with multiple people. But the best thing about vocal improvisation is the range of space and the use of sound and breath and everything. It's just, I love it. I get chills with the freedom that I found in creating robot voices or deciding to bark, you know, and just make sounds. Like, it's fun. It's awesome. And I want these kids to use their very first instrument, which is their voice. Like, you don't have to go rent it. Kids don't have to go, like, ask their parents, hey, can we afford this? Guess what? You have a voice. Let's find a way for you to explore it and see what you can do with it. These kids might need a little outlet, but I also feel like planting a seed in them, watering that seed that's already growing. Because, I mean, everybody has something to offer. And I just feel like if I had a chance to go back and redo everything for myself, I would want to go to, like, exploratory music camps and do all these fun things that are kind of out of the box and put you in a position to let your imagination and let the inner you speak and not be conditioned by the surroundings. I just love that idea. So I'm going to be hosting that at Cultivate 712. That's happening this summer. I'm also working on a few tours. In the summer, I'm going to be going down to South Padre. In October, I'm going from Florida up to New York. And this is all, like, out of my pocket, just hitting the road, just doing it, booking the gigs, and getting out there and living it. And it's possible. You can do anything you want. And you just got to accept what goes with the terms of doing something like that. I obviously couldn't do if I had a kid. I'm someone that's accepted, like, at this point, what I'm doing, there's a reason for it. And all the sacrifices I have to make are necessary. I don't get to live like the normal, like, day-to-day lifestyle that people get to live and come home to their kids. I have freedom every day to explore the world. And I may be in Waco right now, but I'm making plans for down the line. Like, in a few years, I actually want to be in Europe, and I would love to start taking my music and my art form across the ocean and to Europe. I have this romantic notion about Spain, and it started with my father. I have journals of his youth when he lived in Madrid, and he studied at the Fine Art Institute there. And he was inspired watching the bullfights, and he saw Ava Gardner and all these famous people. And he was enamored with the lifestyle of the artist world there. And when he studied there, it was just, he'd fill his journals with all these writings. And I actually want to retrace his steps and fill my journal with writings and just take the same streets, walk down the same paths, and see the same things he did. I feel like that's really important. So I want to write a few books, and that's what's in the work. There's a lot on my to-do list, and I'm getting all done.
Well, Isis, we appreciate you coming in and talking and being honest. It was really great to talk to you.